Tonight, a human drama and the growing threat of a government shutdown. Families caught in the middle. Will Dreamers be forced out, or can Democrats and Republicans reach a deal to keep them in and keep the government open? The president's health, with questions swirling about his fitness for office. For the first time, we hear from Mr. Trump's White House doctor, what he just revealed. The teenager who jumped out of a window and called 911, saving her 12 brothers and sisters, found shackled. Their parents arrested.
What they've been through, I just want to hug them.
Tonight, the children's aunt opens up to NBC News. Top tech insiders sound off, accusing Facebook of putting profits over people.
Facebook's a living, breathing crime scene for what happened in the 2016 election.
And a massive storm stretching from Houston all the way to Boston. Why forecasters say it's hitting at the worst possible time.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our viewers in the West. These are anxious days for almost 750,000 people who grew up in this country and who carved out a piece of the American dream. Tonight, their future is in an immigration limbo as a deadline to the end of the so-called Dreamers program fast approaches. Democrats and Republicans are each insisting they want a deal that would allow Dreamers to stay in this country. But with both sides at odds over the terms, lawmakers are weighing a risky political gambit, shutting down the government. Our chief White House correspondent, Hallie Jackson, tells us what and who is at stake.
Between her three auto shops, her three kids, and the college degree she's trying to finish, Mara Cruz Abarca doesn't get much sleep, but she's getting even less of it these days.
It's really painful as a mother to go to sleep every single night without thinking, you know, that what's going to happen tomorrow.
Abarca was brought to the U.S. illegally when she was 15, allowed to stay, along with about 700,000 other so-called dreamers, under an immigration program that expires in March. That's because President Trump ended the program and asked Congress to come up with a different fix.
If the Democrats really wanted to, they could, but they really sometimes don't want to.
Democrats say they do want to and see their best shot, their best leverage, as Friday's budget battle, because Republicans need them to agree to a spending deal or else the government shuts down. Dreamers demonstrating in Washington today.
We are honest people that want a better solution, not having that fear of being deported to a country that we do not know.
But negotiations are breaking down after a single word, S-hole, turned the debate into something else in the eyes of Senator Lindsey Graham.
This has turned into a S-show.
Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen, who was at Thursday's explosive Oval Office meeting, says she doesn't recall exactly what was said.
What was that strong language?
Apologies, I don't remember a specific word.
Your silence and your amnesia is complicity.
If no one backs down, it could mean President Trump will spend the anniversary of his inauguration in a shutdown. Not just the government in the dark, but people like Mara Cruz Abarca, too.
We are accomplishing this dream, but without DACA, probably we won't be able to see what the other future it's going to bring to us.
There's legal drama, too. After supporters of this immigration program sued to keep it alive, the Trump administration is saying today it will rush to ask the Supreme Court to step in, skipping over a federal appeals court. It's an unusual move intended to get a quick ruling, but one that rarely succeeds. Lester.
High drama in Washington at the White House tonight. Hallie Jackson, thanks. For the first time this evening, we're getting rare insight into President Trump's health directly from the White House doctor. With a debate raging over whether the president is fit for office, his physician said he is in excellent health and also revealed the president underwent a cognitive test at his own request. NBC's Peter Alexander with more now in the results.
President Trump tonight getting a clean bill of health.
In summary, the president's overall health is excellent.
Navy doctor Ronnie Jackson, the White House physician, reporting the president's 6'3" and 239 pounds. Clinically overweight.
I think a reasonable goal over the next year or so is to lose 10 to 15 pounds.
Dr. Jackson recommending Mr. Trump, a proud lover of fast food and dessert, try a diet lower in fat and an exercise regimen.
He's more enthusiastic about the diet part than the exercise part, but we're going to do both.
With questions swirling about President Trump's mental fitness, Jackson says he had absolutely no concerns about the 71-year-old's cognitive abilities, noting that he got a perfect score on what's called the Montreal Cognitive Assessment.
That was not driven at all by any clinical concerns I have. It was driven by the president's wishes.
Among the questions asked, identify the animal and name as many words beginning with F as possible in 1 minute. Dr. Jackson ruling out early onset Alzheimer's and dementia and criticizing medical professionals suggesting it.
That's just tabloid psychiatry. And, you know, he's very sharp and, he's very articulate when he speaks to me.
The president doesn't get much sleep, just 4 to 5 hours a night, but the doctor says that's okay.
He has a lot of energy and a lot of stamina.
Still, he sometimes relies on Ambien during travel overseas. Mr. Trump, the oldest president ever to enter the White House, benefiting from a history free of alcohol and tobacco, though he still takes basic medication, including Propecia to prevent hair loss, and Crestor, which the doctor will raise to help lower the president's cholesterol.
You can understand why his diet's not as good as we'd like it to be, but he definitely needs to lose that weight, get a better diet, exercise more, and of course get his cholesterol under control, which is what a lot of people have to do in this country.
Asked how the president is in such good health despite little to no exercise and bad eating habits, Dr. Jackson said the president has incredibly good genes. And pressed whether he was withholding any medical information, the doctor said there's nothing to hide. Lester?
Peter Alexander tonight, thank you. And this evening there's word of subpoenas flying in the Russia investigation directed at the president's former top aide, Steve Bannon. Bannon was on the Hill today testifying before the House Intelligence Committee, and sources close to the committee are telling NBC News Bannon told members that he wanted to answer all of their questions, but the White House said he could not answer anything related to his time in the transition or in the administration. That prompted the committee to subpoena Bannon, demanding more information. Separately, the New York Times reports, according to one source, that Bannon has also been subpoenaed by special counsel Robert Mueller. Tonight, there are states of emergency in the South from a huge winter storm that stretches just about the length of the country from Texas to Maine. 88 million people are under winter weather advisories or winter storm warnings, and travel is a mess. NBC's Katie Beck is in the storm zone tonight.
Snow-covered semi-trucks frozen still for miles outside Dallas, Texas. Icy roads throughout the state closing highways and canceling hundreds of flights as a winter storm dumps snow and ice across the South, bringing bitter cold.
The chilly winds could be into the teens.
In Louisiana, slippery roads causing crashes.
Yeah, watch out.
Even emergency personnel finding slick surfaces a struggle. And in Kentucky, a state trooper giving this warning.
There are a lot of people that are out here that are driving far too fast for the conditions.
A frightening scene as a mom and her 5 children slid onto a frozen lake in Ohio. Sideways and sinking, the family saved by 2 bystanders. Sheets of thick ice still jamming Connecticut waterways, causing dangerous floods.
We're looking at every option because we haven't dealt with this before.
The U.S. Coast Guard called to cut through the frozen rivers. The storm now heads northeast, impacting morning commutes from the Carolinas to New England. For thousands of kids, the weather is welcome and another snow day at home. Katie Beck, NBC News, Atlanta.
Some very powerful words in a Michigan courtroom today as sentencing got underway for a former USA gymnastics team doctor who has pleaded guilty to sexually abusing underage girls. More than 100 accusers, including several Olympic gold medalists, have come forward with their stories, and dozens plan to speak out during Larry Nassar's hearing. Today, one by one, they began bravely facing him down in court. Our Stephanie Gosk has details.
Predator, monster, master manipulator, repulsive liar. The names used to describe Larry Nassar at his sentencing hearing in Michigan today.
He betrayed my trust, took advantage of my youth, and sexually abused me hundreds of times.
I've experienced flashback nightmares of the abuse.
She took her own life because she couldn't deal with the pain anymore.
Kyle Stevens was just 6 when the abuse began.
You used my body for 6 years for your own sexual gratification.
Nassar, a family friend.
Feelings of shame, disgust, and self-hatred brought me bouts of depression, anxiety, eating disorders.
The former head doctor for the Olympic gymnastics team pleaded guilty to multiple charges of child sexual abuse. Among his more than 150 accusers, Olympic gold medal winners Ali Raisman, Gabby Douglas, Michaela Maroney, and now Simone Biles, who went public on Monday. The victim's statements could last days, some pointing a finger at Nassar's former employers.
It's horrifying that MSU and USA Gymnastics are not stepping up to the plate to admit their wrongdoing.
USA Gymnastics says it reached out to the FBI soon after a complaint was made, while MSU says any suggestion that the university covered up Nasser's horrific conduct is simply false. Nice. In court today, Nasser's accusers looked their abuser in the eye.
Little girls don't stay little forever. They grow into strong women that return to destroy your world.
Nasser, head in his hands, at times visibly shaking. Nowhere to go and no choice but to listen. Stephanie Gosk, NBC News.
Another record on Wall Street today, just 12 days after crossing 25,000. The Dow crossed 26,000 today for the first time. Stocks, however, pulled back from those highs, the Dow finishing the day down about 10 points at 25,792, the NASDAQ and S&P down as well. Let's turn now to an NBC News exclusive. Facebook under new fire tonight from three Silicon Valley insiders who accuse the tech giant of profiting at the expense of users like you. And they say warnings were ignored as Facebook focused on its bottom line, opening the door for Russia to exploit its platform during the 2016 election. All three sat down with our business correspondent, Jolene Kent.
Tonight, a stunning charge against Facebook.
Facebook's a living, breathing crime scene for what happened in the 2016 election. And only they have full access to what happened.
From three Silicon Valley insiders.
Did Facebook neglect its responsibility to its users?
In retrospect, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Roger McNamee, an early Facebook investor and former mentor to CEO Mark Zuckerberg, Sandy Parakilas, a former Facebook manager, and Tristan Harris, a former design ethicist at Google. Together, they accuse Facebook of prioritizing profits over people, pointing to Russia's 2016 misinformation campaign against American voters, carried out in part through targeted ads on Facebook. Parakilas, who worked for Facebook on privacy issues in 2011 and 2012, now speaking on camera for the first time, saying he sounded the alarm for 4 years before the 2016 election. Warning senior executives during the Arab Spring that the social network could be misused by foreign governments.
It makes me terrified that something that I had a small part in helping to build is being used by people with really bad intent against America.
Former Zuckerberg mentor McNamee says he raised a red flag, too, emailing Zuckerberg and Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg about suspicious activity on Facebook in October of 2016.
I got emails back from both Sheryl and Mark. They treated it like a public relations problem rather than a substantive issue for the business.
Facebook now has 2 billion users every month. That's more than the populations of the U.S. and China combined. And to keep them engaged, these three argue Facebook has a financial incentive not to limit ads or misinformation as long as it's getting clicks.
The company just continuously prioritized user growth and making money over protecting users.
Making you angry, making you afraid is really good for Facebook's business. It is not good for America. It's not good for the users of Facebook.
And is it good for democracy?
I would say decisively not.
We asked Facebook for a response to the specific charges from this group. They sent us a statement saying, in part, Facebook is a vastly different company from when it was first founded. In the past year, we've worked to destroy the business model for false news and reduce its spread, stop bad actors from meddling in elections, and bring a new level of transparency to advertising. But these three insiders who are forming a new advocacy organization say the issues should spark changes to other social media companies, too, including allowing outside researchers to look through company data for suspicious activity and creating a subscription model where users pay a small monthly fee and see fewer ads.
Their goal wasn't to let this happen. The problem was they crafted a model that was so perfect for them because they had been told culturally in Silicon Valley that it was okay to disrupt things.
Lester, as we reported here last week, Facebook will be changing its news feed soon, prioritizing updates from friends and family. That means you'll see fewer ads and posts from companies. Facebook also telling us tonight we have more work to do and we're heads down on getting it done.
Some pretty strong allegations. Changes how you look at the content.
Definitely.
All right, Jolene, thanks very much. Still ahead, one family's horrible secret. 13 siblings imprisoned by their own parents. The heroic sister who escaped and brought rescue. And tonight, their aunt and uncle speak exclusively to us. Also, those who serve. The World War II veteran who at 93 isn't done serving his country or his community. We're back now with new details in a story that shocked the nation. 13 brothers and sisters found shackled to their beds, their parents under arrest now. One of those kids, a teenager, made a run for it, jumping from a window and calling for help. Tonight, the children's aunt is speaking out about their ordeal to NBC News, and we get all of it from NBC News national correspondent Miguel Almaguer.
This is the quaint suburban home where police say 13 siblings were held captive by their parents, some shackled to furniture with chains and padlocks, starving and dirty. Police say a 17-year-old jumped from a window and called 911.
If you can imagine being chained to a bed, being malnourished and injuries associated with that, I would call that torture.
David and Luis Turpin were arrested for torture and child endangerment, in contrast to photos on Facebook of a family who took trips to theme parks. Ranging in age from 2 to 29 years old, detectives originally thought seven adults were kids, they say, because they were so malnourished.
It just breaks my heart.
Luis Turpin's sister and brother tell NBC News exclusively they never knew their nieces and nephews could have been physically and psychologically tortured for years.
I can't imagine what they've been through. I just want to hug them.
I'm very angry with them, but then feel bad for the kids.
Hi, David.
First married when she was 16, they often renewed their vows with their children by their side. David Turpin worked as an engineer, making $140,000 a year, filing for bankruptcy in 2011. Kimberly Milligan lives next door.
They looked pale, like vampire pale.
And they were all thin?
They were all thin.
Tonight, a house of horrors in plain sight, where an unspeakable nightmare was playing out for 13 children.
David Turpin had received state approval to run a private school from the home behind me, but officials say that home may have never been inspected because the state never had the legal requirement to do so. Lester?
It's as heartbreaking as it is shocking. Miguel Almaguer, thank you. Coming up tonight, dueling volcanoes, the explosive threats in paradise and have thousands fleeing. Also, who would you rather hang out with, your friends or man's best friend? There is trouble in paradise, a pair of volcanic eruptions threatening to turn explosive in two Pacific countries. Thousands have been evacuated in the Philippines and Papua New Guinea. And dog lovers, have you ever skipped out on friends to hang out with your pups? Turns out a lot of people have. 51% say they sometimes cancel on social occasions just to spend time with their dogs, according to a new survey. Up next here tonight, he served his country during World War II. Now he's serving his community after a stunning upset. Finally tonight, our ongoing series, Those Who Serve, takes us to New Jersey to meet a man who staged something of a political upset to serve his community at the age of 93. Part of a legacy of service that began aboard an American warship in the Pacific during World War II. So has the job been everything you thought it would be?
in a sense, yeah.
Vito Perillo is the new mayor of Tinton Falls, New Jersey.
This is my appointment book.
A rookie at age 93. Why did you want to be mayor?
I was tired of the taxes going up, up, up every year. And rather than complain about it, I says, I'm going to give it a shot.
I mayor-elect Vito Perillo.
Perillo beat the incumbent the old-fashioned way, campaigning door-to-door.
Vote Vito.
You went through two pair of shoes. Yeah,
the sole came right off, one pair. And the other pair got all soaking wet. Anyway, yeah, I actually went through two pair of shoes.
This is not the first time he's serving his country. He was an electronics technician aboard a ship in the Navy during World War II. Perillo spent the next four decades working for the Defense Department until his retirement. It was brief.
And my wife says to me, I guess I look a little forlorn and a little out of it. And she says, why don't you go get yourself a job?
So he did, as a bookkeeper.
This is your wife here.
My wife, yeah. Yeah.
Perillo lost his wife, May, a few years ago and paid tribute to her by using her Bible for his swearing in.
So help me God. Congratulations, man.
His family right by his side.
A lot of people have told me it gave them courage. They said they listen to the news and it's all bad, all the time bad news. But when they heard about me, 93-year-old man, becoming mayor, they put a smile on their faces.
Bobby! Congratulations.
We should all be so fit and active. In case you're wondering, Perillo is not the oldest mayor in the country. The mayor of Boonville, Kentucky, is 98 and going strong. That is nightly news for this Tuesday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.